Welcome to B2B Podcast Stories, brought to you by GHA Marketing. Our guest today is Sean Flynn. Sean is the principal of Global Capital Markets and podcast host of the Silicon Valley Podcast. Sean is highly engaged in the Silicon Valley technology ecosystem of rapidly expanding high-profile potential companies and works with institutions, governments, and diverse financial sources to support economic growth on a worldwide scale. Today, expect to learn the importance of meticulous guest acquisition and how Sean uses personal connections and strategic outreach to secure high-profile interviews, explore the transformative power of podcasting as a tool for building relationships and expanding networks, and discover the significance of continuous learning and mentorship in personal and professional growth. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you're listening to this show. It really helps the podcast, and we're going to keep bringing you amazing guests and stories about all the different ways podcasting can help your business. And with that, here is Sean Flynn.
Sean, you have a very interesting podcast name, because when we look at, when you want to buy a domain name, for instance, you obviously have competitive domain names. And I suppose that the domain name Silicon Valley is pretty hard to obtain and pretty expensive. You have the Silicon Valley podcast. Tell me a bit about it. How did you start that? What is it about?
Actually, the funniest part of all that is it was available. And I was looking at it going, how is this available? Like, it just didn't make sense to me. I was thinking, does no one else have a big enough ego to just take this domain? Has this been hidden and just now on the market, like right now as I'm searching for it? So when I saw it, I actually, did the search of podcast and Silicon Valley and what names were available. And some of the names were like Silicon Valley Podcast God or something like that, like these crazy ones. I'm like, I can't do that. And for some reason, I was just typing, I wonder if the Silicon Valley Podcast is available. And lo and behold, it was. And right then I was like, I got to grab this one right now. This is too perfect.
But that's 4 years ago. You started 4 years ago, right?
A little longer at this point.
Oh, really? Okay. So when did you start?
So we were on 6 months going into the pandemic lockdown. So what was that? March of 2020. So started 2019. But even before that, I had a public access TV show called Silicon Valley Successes. And I did 46 episodes with that. It ended up in 28 cities in the U.S. on public access. Because, how great is, a public access station? They go, oh my gosh, there's this available content called Silicon Valley Successes where they interview people in Silicon Valley. Let's get that on our public access station. So it had okay circulation. It was actually in LA 36, the biggest public access station in the U.S. And, people were messaging me. And through that, I got connected with a podcast platform that wanted to do a podcast on Silicon Valley. And, I signed a contract with them for a 6-month agreement to do episodes. So I released 32 episodes with them. Then the pandemic started. We went separate ways. I rebranded to the Silicon Valley Podcast and then just kept it going. There was a brief pause there during the lockdown just because, no one knew what was going on. And up until then, I'd done every interview in person. And I just really enjoy doing the in-person interview more than the virtual, just the connection's a little bit better, the sound. There's a lot of things to it when you're sitting 2 feet away from the person you're talking to versus remote. But, have done a lot of interviews virtual since then, but kept the interviews going. And now we're on episode, 219? No, 221, 221 now.
Making millions in pet music with Amam Hamed.
Yep, that was last week. That story was incredible. When I got the introduction to that guest, I was thinking, okay, this is going to be interesting because it's not that normal tech. I have an idea using these algorithms or this cutting-edge technology or whatever it was. Wait, you're telling me an entrepreneur that had a successful exit making pet music? Yeah, it's this guy. You got to hear his story. It's incredible. I'll meet the guy, but I don't think he's going to be on my podcast. And then, 5-10 minutes of my conversation was me going, hey, you got to be on my podcast.
please come. Wait, so pet music, because maybe it's my English level here. Pet music is what, like small music, or is it music for pets?
Music for pets. So his YouTube channel, when he had something like in every 28 days, had 128 years of content being downloaded. So that, just think of the number of hours, the number of downloads. And what was very interesting, and I didn't get this at first, but in the episode, he explains he owned all the content. So all the music is like relaxing music for pet or that, but he owned the content. So he actually had created his own music studio, his own music library, his own that could be taken and packaged and then resold or reused in so many different ways, from, you know, dog food commercials to this, to that, you name it, it's his content. And so he packaged that and then he sold that to a music studio. And now that studio has a pet music division. So thinking of it that way, it makes sense. But even he didn't know what he was building, right? Like when you think about it, it was, yeah, I'm going to put some stuff up and I'll make some money off the YouTube ads and that. And, oh, wow, we're getting some traction. We're getting a lot of downloads. Huh, we're getting a following. Now you have all these subscribers and everything you can do with subscribers. And they just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then he had a very successful exit. Exact number, undisclosed, wouldn't say. But, you know, it according to my research and the newspaper articles I read about him, you know, it was very healthy.
Not too bad. So I had no idea this thing existed. So I just Googled or YouTubed, however we say that, pet music. And you have some videos with like 50 million views, 479K views. But still, that's massive.
It's some of those videos, look at them. They're like 12 hours long. Of just imagine putting that in the background with your dog, just leaving it on for an entire day.
Are dogs relaxing, you think, when they listen to this? I mean, I hope.
On the website, it shows dogs, you know, going up to the computer monitor, listening and falling asleep. So
the guy is good. I'll put the link in the description. That's a funny one. So, Sean, when you rebranded the Silicon Valley podcast, I mean, I can't help but think about the Facebook versus just Facebook. So why the Silicon Valley podcast and not simply Silicon Valley podcast? Was this one not available?
Actually, that's true. It wasn't. So I would have taken that one in a heartbeat, but I'm not sure how many thousands of dollars the domain name wanted. And I looked at it going, okay, so I got this like $12 one or, you know, whatever, 20K or something like that, ridiculous for the word the. And I didn't even see a podcast using that domain name, which was frustrating to me. So, you know, stuck with the, and it's been a blessing.
It works, man. So what is the podcast about? What do you discuss there above and beyond, obviously, the Silicon Valley? What is the podcast about?
Well, the origin of the story kind of came about two ways. One, I was helping a lot of companies from overseas set up operations in Silicon Valley and vice versa. And I was having similar conversations all the time. And I thought, and this is the origin of the TV show too, of, hey, let me just interview these experts I'm making all these intros to, package it. And then that way, instead of having the same conversation over and over again, I could just go, hey, listen to video 2, listen to video 8, listen to video 17. And if you have questions, we can have a follow-up then. But then I started thinking a little bit more about it and thought, oh my gosh, you could take Silicon Valley, you could package it, all the resources, all the experience here, and create this library that anyone in the world can access. And that's kind of been the goal of the podcast since then, of just, okay, we have these experts here that have taken multiple companies public or multiple acquisitions or invested in these companies, or you don't have this experience anywhere else in the world. Yeah, other places in the world, they do have tech hubs, but they're younger, where people are having their first exit, or maybe their second at this point. It's not 40, 50 years, second, third generation of VCs in a family or that. That's no place else. And so when I started making these recordings and sending it out, I would get, or I still am, I'm getting these people from the most random parts of the world going, Sean, I listened to your podcast. I'm using it now. There's, for example, a person in Cameroon that's using it to teach an entrepreneur class. Before the war with Ukraine and Russia, there was a Russian MBA program using it for their international business course. There's, I mean, the list goes on and on of just other people using this content for ways I didn't expect. And it's a blessing. It's the craziest thing to get a random email from someone in Kenya going, I didn't know what financial models were, and now I created one for my farm. And you're like, oh, okay, I did not expect that one, but this is great. And, you know, it motivates you, it excites you. And people here in Silicon Valley, a lot of my guests, there's a few that are more household names that are very difficult to get to. Other than just my interview, I don't really have much access to them outside of that. But for the most part, a lot of my guests are really approachable. And some of them have even told me, Sean, this is the first podcast I've ever been on. And I'm listening to them going, wait, don't you have the patent for the invention of the transistor? Like, aren't you a celebrity? You know, like, some of these people are just crazy. Like, I've interviewed some people at private equity groups. They have like $1 billion assets under management. And they're sitting there going, I'm pretty nervous to be on a podcast. I'm like, wait a sec, I can pause this. We can edit. We can, like, you're nervous. Like, how do you think I feel? Like, it's just crazy. So when some of these people overseas go, hey, could you, you know, I really want an intro to that guest. The guests are thrilled as well. Like, whoa, I have someone listen to this podcast and actually really liked my information. This is great. So it's a win-win for everyone.
That's impressive. How do you find those guests? How do you find the inventor of the pattern of the transistor? Like, how do you come around that?
So the first, about 30 guests were challenging. The first 11 were extremely difficult to get and to schedule. Once they were recorded and live, then it became easy. So my first guest ever was Melody Perkins, founder of Canva. And because of that, it was very easy to get other people because it was, oh, wow, you just started your podcast. Who have you had? My first interview was the founder of Canva. And then, you know, guest number 4, founder of Rotten Tomatoes. I had the person that brought PayPal into Asia for guest number 7. And each of these guests, the first thing I'd ask them would be, hey, is there anyone in your network that you could introduce me to for, you know, a future episode? And when you're at that level, their networks are insane. I remember one time, one of the guys I interviewed, Alan Tien, he was the guy that brought PayPal into Asia. When I asked him, he literally was like, give me a few minutes, just goes on his phone. Next thing I know, there's a warm intro to, at that time, the CEO of Upwork, the CEO of Point. Like, it was just 5 intros to CEOs. And they all responded going, well, if you're a buddy of Alan's, then you must be a good guy. Like, that was it. It was just, okay, proof point, this guy says you're good. And we've known him for years, so you got to be a good guy. And I'd known Alan from a delegation. I went with him to Asia for the big data conference and all that years before and built a good relationship with him. So he felt comfortable making those intros. And then after that, after those first initial group of guests, yeah, there is still outreach to finding some more. But honestly, about episode 30, every guest has been a warm intro from a past guest or a listener or a PR company or marketing company. It just gets better and better. But that first initial part, that was the challenge. And then after that, all it was, who's been on your show? Here are some names. Oh, can I be on it?
Wait a minute. I want to be in. Man. That's impressive. But wait, so let's just take a step back here. Melanie Perkins, I mean, Sean, you're a successful investment banker. We're going to get back to it in a second. You're doing things right, but you were starting this show. I mean, you had the Silicon Valley success before. Did that help? Like, how do you come around aligning up in the first 11 guests? I mean, 3 superstars from what you've said, but probably even more than that with the other guests. How do you, when you start a podcast, because I think that's something our listeners can learn from. Like, how do you, when starting off a podcast, right off the bat, managed to get some A players as guests?
So Melody Perkins, that was a warm introduction from the podcast platform I was on. And they had built out that relationship. The other guest, Alan Tien and them, those were personal relationships I'd had for years before. And it was really Alan that introduced me to so many people that was on the podcast. So I had personal network before that for a number of years. I was helping take delegations to tech parks overseas. And from that, I got to meet some pretty heavy hitters. Piero Scaruffi was on my podcast. He's overseas. His nickname is, you know, the godfather of Silicon Valley. This guy's a legend. Stanford, you know, AI, ML professor in the past. Just ran a ton of books. So having, you know, Melly was a warm intro. I had a few that were in my personal network that I asked them, please do me this favor. You know, it would be fantastic. You've known me for years. This would help me out so much. Then you have that one big one that goes, let me introduce everyone in my Rolodex to you. You're my buddy. I want to help you out any way I can. And then you have this package that after that, when you present it to anyone going, these are the names. Would you want to be part of this? They get excited because they want to see themselves in that circle. And also, it's that stamp of approval for their marketing, their, you know, the chief marketing officer. Should my CEO be on this podcast? Well, let me look at who the past guests are. Yes. You know, this is fantastic. This is where we want to be. This is the sandbox we want to play in. And then after that, you know, people know so many people. And that's one thing about Silicon Valley. The beauty of Silicon Valley really is the network. Everyone has that contact that exited this company, that worked at this company, that invested in this company, that did something big. It's a small community, Silicon Valley. You drive the whole thing in an hour. And imagine, I mean, just think of all the unicorn companies that have been built here over the years, all the famous venture capitalists that are here. If you're a startup pretty much anywhere in the world, you're going to have an investor, you're going to have an office, you're going to have something in Silicon Valley. And whoever runs that office is going to go to some event with somebody that is a second degree connection on LinkedIn with you, that you're going to look at a name and go, wait a second, this person knows that person. Huh, well, I haven't caught up with this person in a while. Let me ask them for coffee. Hey, you know, blah, blah, podcast is going great. I'm really looking for a couple guests. I know on your LinkedIn, you're connected with these people. Or would you be okay making an intro? Oh, Sean, we've just talked for an hour. Of course, buddy, I'll do you a favor here right now, right in front of you. I'll make that connection. There you guys go, you know. Just give me a thank you on the podcast or something like that. And you know, whenever anyone makes an intro for me, I sometimes forget, but I really try to make the effort to thank them on the podcast, send them a thank you email right after the introduction and after the interview goes live, and really give that, you know, public praise, because that introduction is what facilitated the interview. And I'll call them out at events if I have the opportunity to be on stage, saying, I'd like to thank this person for making the intro, that person for making the intro, that person, and all the guests, you know, and really make it about the intro almost than the guest. And then people in the audience or everywhere goes, wait a second, I want to get this. I know some people. Well, after, you know, when he gets off stage, I'm going to talk to him and say, hey, you know, my ex-boss, the CEO of this company I was at before, I think he'd be good for your show. Or, you know, my friend's company just got funded. It's a later stage company. Would you be interested? And maybe if not him, maybe some of the investors in it. And people start thinking about who in their networks. And it's, like I said, small community that you do right by one person. They want to help you out and introduce you to others. And then when they're comfortable, they introduce you to others. And I really also try to build the relationship with the guest. So I'm not sure if you want me to go into detail, but I got a pretty good perfect. So like my process is I want that person to feel they know, like, and trust me before the interview and after the interview. So before the interview, you know, nice little email. Thanks for the introduction. Let's set up a nice 30-minute Zoom call. Have that introduction call where I'm convincing them, telling them, I'm not going to throw any trick questions, got you questions, you know, conversation. Here's a question outline that I'm thinking about. Let me know your thoughts. They come back with some edits, you know, thank them for the edits, make the changes, show them on the call, have a nice little prep session before, do the interview, you know, talk to them after, have a follow-up going, what are your thoughts? Do I need to edit anything? Are things good? Okay. Once again, just for them to go, okay, I can trust this guy. He's not edited in some way that it's going to make me look bad. Interview comes out, share the links with them, thank them, try to set up a meeting for a coffee follow-up or something. Just all these touch points. And some of these people, you might go, man, they must be very difficult to get a hold of, but they're difficult to get a hold of because everyone wants their time. But once you're in that trust circle, you'd be amazed how approachable some of these people are and how they'll just block off their calendar just for a catch-up call with you, just because, you know, you don't really have an agenda other than just catching up because the last conversation was so good. And by having a podcast, a lot of people are in this community that I work in, they're really curious what I'm hearing, because they're thinking, well, Sean's having these conversations with all these VIP, he must be listening to the most cutting edge things that people are working on, talking about. Well, I'm curious. So, you know, let's have a catch up call with Sean just to see what he's hearing. And, you know, the opportunities then arise so that not only do I have them as my guests, but you know, I've built some pretty good relationships with some of my past guests. And then once again, during those follow-up, maybe second or third meeting with them, hey, Sean, you know, I got this buddy. He wants to do some marketing for a book he's coming out with. Would he be okay on your podcast? Well, let me look him up. Yes, the answer is yes, but I'm going to pretend it's a, you know, maybe. Oh, the queue is, you know, 3-4 months, but because he's a friend of yours, more than happy to get him on the show, you know, but that's just because you know how it is. And it's incredible. It's incredible once there's that momentum, you know, what just feeds off of it and the opportunities that keep coming over and over again. So it's amazing.
Sean, podcast is an amazing networking tool, but you have taken it to the next level. Like, we advocate for that. We advocate for, hey, you are, I don't know, a realtor in a 50,000 inhabitants town. Start a podcast. Interview the restaurant owner. Interview the hairdresser. Interview people about the nicest places in your city. In no time, people know you for your podcast, but they also know you're a realtor. And like, it's an amazing way to network with peers in your industry. You've taken it to the next level. You've taken it to a point where you're scaling that. Because the issue with the podcast when it comes to networking is one-to-one. Like 1 hour and a half of your time only buys you 1 hour and a half of your time with one person. You connect with people that then connect you with 1, 2, 3 other people. And everybody is equal in a certain way, but you're talking with like people who founded unicorns, who are investors in big tech companies, who are doing X, Y, Z in the world. That's crazy. Actually, I might even draw inspiration from your tactic here, Sean. So after this interview, I might ask you for a couple of recommendations. But let's keep that for the end. But that's, man, that's really, really cool. So a few things you talked about that I want to unpack. So are you in the Silicon Valley yourself?
So I actually live pretty much in the center of it. So if you know San Mateo, Palo Alto area, so I live right there. I used to live in San Francisco, but no, I've been in Silicon Valley now since 2013. Last 10 years I've been here involved in the startup ecosystem in some way or form.
Okay, cool. Yes. So I see it. I'm from France, as you might hear with the accent. And I actually didn't know geographically where exactly was Silicon Valley. So I just Googled it right now. Okay, so it's in between San Jose and San Francisco, basically. And there is this kind of bay. Okay, cool. The platform that you mentioned, so when I asked about, hey, how did you get in touch with Melanie, you said it was a warm introduction from the podcast platform you were using at the time. What's that podcast platform? What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, the podcast, it was a podcast network. So if you want to go to the Investors Podcast Network, they got some amazing podcasts there. We study billionaires, Stig Broder, and their quality of work is second to none. They're always a top 10 financial podcast. If you go under their podcast, the first 32 episodes are on their podcast or their website still. And they, if you go to their website, you'll see the number of downloads they have. They do an incredible job. They've taken it to the next level where they got a newsletter, they got courses, they got, you know, started off as a podcast, but, you know, evolved into books and this and that, and they really built it out spectacular. So right there, that was where I was for the first, you know, few months.
So I'm on the website right now. Again, I'm going to put the link in the show notes. 152 million downloads. That's not too bad for a podcast. So definitely they know what they're up to. So the podcast is clear. What do you do as a business? What do you do in life next to the podcast? And what's the link between the podcast and your business?
Well, the podcast and what I do is just a funnel of just this one connects to the other, connects to the other, connects to the other, connects to the other. And that's the beauty. So when I'm not doing the podcast and actually, you know, about 90% of my waking hours, I'm an investment banker, long hours, but it's exciting work. It's challenging, which is, you're always learning, which is what I like. There's never a dull moment. You're always learning about companies, businesses, you're diving into their financials, you're diving into how they work, the processes. It's one of those careers where it's a love-hate thing. Either you love it and you just get absorbed by it, or you think, what have I done with my life? Why am I here? What choices did I make? Why didn't I have anyone to guide me down that other road? So it's one of those careers. But with that, you know, I want to get in front of those business owners. I want to get in front of those people that are looking to raise growth capital. I want to get it, you know, the people I have on my show are the exact people I want to get in front of for my day-to-day career, right? So for your listeners that aren't really sure what I do as an investment banker, there's so many things that fall under the investment banker realm. So I have my little story. Think of it this way. You go through life, you meet that partner, that special someone, you come together, you get married, two equals become one. That's a merger. Now you're hand in hand with your significant other, you're walking in the park, and you see a little puppy, and you go, oh my gosh, if I brought this puppy into our house, there'd be so much more love. The house would be so much bigger. So you acquire that puppy through an acquisition. So that puppy, it needs to go from this little puppy to this big dog. It needs food, it needs shots, it needs a paid for subscription for pet music. But, you know, all that money it needs, well, it needs growth capital. And then, you know, you got this big family now. And this dog has, you know, it's a big dog now. It's listened to pet music for 4 or 5 years. Now it's, you know, and it even was listening to some when the neighbor's pet started walking by the front yard. And lo and behold, now there's all these puppies everywhere. And the neighbor says, oh my gosh, I want to buy one of these puppies. So through a divestiture, you sell one of these puppies to this neighbor. So all those transactions that happen in life, that's what I do with businesses all day long. And I focus on that middle market, lower middle market. Companies can be global. They can be in any sector. We're sector agnostic at the investment bank I'm with. For us, it's more that deal size that we focus on. But that's what I do all day long. So imagine me being able to sit down with all these business owners, these investors, these decision makers. And some of them are on my podcast. Some of them aren't. But it's a great way to open up doors. It's a great way to get warm introductions to decision makers because, you know, once again, no one says no to a podcast. They might say no to meeting an investment banker, but it could be like, oh, yeah, it was my mom's funeral right now. But to be on a podcast? Oh, yeah, of course. I'll go to that first. That's way more important. It's just crazy how people open up their calendars for a podcast. What would I rather do? Sit down for coffee and kind of get to know someone or interview them on a podcast and then have this piece of content that they're on, that bonding that, you know, that person has that connection pretty much forever, it seems. I mean, they remember that time, the conversation. It's a big deal for a lot of people. So now the investment banking feeds into the podcast feeds in the investment banking, you know, and everything else I do, it's just this circle. I mean, for example, way back when I got to interview Steve Snyder, he was the founder of Zap Electric. He had raised $1 billion for them. The company didn't succeed, but you know, when you raise $1 billion, you impress some people, let's just say. Well, I interviewed him and afterwards said, hey, let's grab lunch. The lunch, thought it was going to be 45 minutes. We ended up talking for 4 hours because he had gone to China and had all these China stories. And I'd lived in China for almost 5 years. And it's very hard to, or very rare to meet someone that has that same life experience where you're saying, no, this is the craziest story. No. I can top that. Here's a crazier story. Oh, wait, I just remembered this other story. You're not going to believe. Oh, I believe it. Most people that have not lived overseas for that long, when you tell them a story, they go, nah, that didn't happen. And you're like, no, it did. And then someone that's been through that, like, I believe that because I experienced something similar. So we got along, we stayed in contact, and now he's got a new project. He's the CEO of Homes for the Homeless, and I mean, they're doing some incredible things right now. And, you know, he asked me if I want to be involved with it. And that's just because of this relationship that was fostered based on an interview that happened. And that interview was a warm introduction from actually a previous guest. So it just, you never know where things will take you. That's the craziest part. I mean, yes, this goes to it, that saying, it's all in the follow-up and keeping those relationships alive and warm. And, you know, you have to, but at the same time, once you put in that initial investment to get to know the person, the follow-up's easy. Just, hey, what are you up to? Oh, I'm doing this. No way. Let's catch up. There. Simple.
Here you go. Sean, that was probably the best investment banker explained to newbie speech I have ever heard. If anything, probably any industry ever. That was absolutely perfect. Did you practice that one or did you come up with it on the spot?
No, I've done so many iterations of that. In fact, if you go to thesiliconvalleypodcast.com, at the very bottom of it, I actually had a graduate student at the Art Academy make it into a cartoon. So if you want to check out the cartoon version of it, go to the podcast website and scroll to the very bottom.
So I actually saw that earlier when I was obviously searching a bit about you. I'll put that link in the description as well. Absolutely awesome. So what I like about what you explain is the work you're doing, an investment banker, you rely very heavily on your network. It's about trust. If you want to make deals, you need trust from the person you're dealing with, but all the other counterparts. And as an investment banker, you also become the person people go through to make deals. And for that, you need trust and network. I love how that fits perfectly into the podcast. Now, the angle that you've taken is with the Silicon Valley podcast, you talk about all things, not just investment banking. Was that deliberate or how did you imagine strategize, if any? Maybe not, maybe you're just like, let's go with the flow. But how did you say, okay, my job is this. I see the interest of networking like that. As you said, everybody's available for a podcast. It's crazy, but it's cool as well because people like to chat. People like to build that connection. How do you come up with the Silicon Valley podcast strategy as an investment banker?
So the strategy at the beginning was actually more to create that reference library I talked to for entrepreneurs, investors, leaders in tech. And I didn't think it was going to carry over as much as it did. I just thought, okay, I'm going to focus on Silicon Valley where all my guests will have some relationship with Silicon Valley. I'll meet these people. And at first I thought, Silicon Valley over here, this will be the podcast. It's going to be something fun. I'm going to enjoy because I'm going to have a lot of these great conversations where at first I was just thinking, because going back to the TV show, one thing I loved about that was I get to ask experts questions. So if I'm curious on a topic, what are the odds? 2 weeks from now, that guest is going to be that expert in that subject. And so I was using it originally almost as finding mentors out there. In fact, one of my interviews, Maya Tusing, she used to manage something like $200 billion at BlackRock. So I always call her my mentor in a joking way. We've built this great relationship over the years. And she worked at three of the Fortune 10 companies sometime in her career. Like, her background is insane. And where's it going with this?
The inception of the podcast and how do you strategize the theme and what you want to talk about, and you were making with the link with the TV show.
Just having people like that, I thought, okay, well, one, I never knew I was going to get there, but it was just, okay, I'll create this reference library and that'll be here and the investment banking will be over there. And then suddenly over time, they started merging slower and slower into one where, a gentleman, Koki, he took a company public in Japan. He sits on boards in China, US, Japan. We were talking after our interview and he asked me, how do you make a living in Silicon Valley as a podcast host? I mean, how much money do you make from it? And I said, I don't make anything. I'm actually an investment banker. And he paused and he went, if I had known you're an investment banker, I would not have talked to you. And then a little bit longer pause and then he said, but I have a project you might be interested in. And so it's just that loop. And I mean, going back to Maya, personally, she's introduced me to so many people and it's just one, it feeds in the other. It's just this circle. And I had no idea it was going to get there. I just thought reference library, all this knowledge that people anywhere in the world, going back, I would think people in Canada, Kenya, Madagascar would love to find out Maya Tusing's history story, how she was able to succeed and get where she was. That was my thoughts at the beginning. I had no idea it was going to be, hey, Maya is friends with Sean and now she feels comfortable making warm intros to Sean, and her network that she's built over these years is at that level where, writing these checks that most people would consider astronomical, that's just what they do all day. And just one led into the other. And it goes back to that know, like, trust. You're given the opportunity for someone to get to know you. you're given the opportunity to build that relationship. That person likes you. And then if you're that, you know, good person that they like, trust gets built. And then once that trust is there, when you have all these other people trying to take advantage of them and use them for their time or use them for the others, and there's this one person they know, like, and now they trust, it goes in your direction. It flows that way. And, you know, just it takes time. Most people are frustrated by how long it takes because they think, I'll do 10 episodes and I'll have a million followers and everything. You're like, no, that's not how it works. It's a grind. But over time, when you look back, you'll be surprised at all the good fortune that comes from that work that at the time you had no idea any of the things were going to happen.
What has been your biggest challenge, Sean? Because right now, what you're walking us through is quite the success story. What has been your biggest challenge with your podcast?
Time management, for sure. I mean, at first, I was doing all the editing and everything myself. Then I got someone overseas in the Philippines to do the editing. But, I mean, that takes so much of the workload off. Just I do the interview, send it overseas, get it back, check it, goes live. It's still time consuming. That's a challenge. And I'm not sure if there's a polite way of saying this, but there's a lot of people that asked to be on your show that are not a good fit for the show. And it's clear they've never listened to this show. They just meet you at an event and go, oh, I hear you have a podcast. Hey, I want to be on your show. It's that awkward of, yeah, you know, the queue is very long. So let's circle back 6 months from now. Or, you know, that person that takes it personally when you're like, listen, my podcast is The Silicon Valley. You're a real estate agent from Nebraska. There's not that overlap. And to me, it's clear. I don't know why you're pushing so hard for this, but, you know, do you have a prop tech company that you're raising cap, you know, that you've already raised so many millions that you're about to exit? Like, what, how is there the Silicon Valley connection? Because there's a defined thesis for the show. You know, people listen in and they think, okay, this is an entrepreneur that has a connection or an investor or a leader in tech with Silicon Valley, not this remote area where it's, wait, you want to pitch your new religion on the show? I don't know how that overlaps with, you know, why are you sending me 5, 10, who is in charge of your marketing? I just don't get it.
Oh, man. I was going to ask you, what's the weirdest anecdote that you can walk us through? I guess it's a pretty good one.
I mean, I've had so many crazy ones. Well, the craziest, and I won't actually say the stories, but these entrepreneurs got insane stories. And there's the stories that they'll say while you're recording the podcast. And then there's the stories after the recording's done where they go, hey, are we recording anymore? And you go, no, let me tell you a little bit more about that. And you're sitting there going, you're just shaking your head going, am I safe to hear this? What? Wait, what? Wait, that's what happened for the IPO? Like, what the? Like, there's so many of these stories that when you hear them, you go, wow, that's incredible. But then when you hear just a few more details, you go, wait a second, there was such a huge luck component to this that most people don't, you know, when you tell a story of yourself, it's, I was so sophisticated. I thought this all out. I planned all that. And then in reality, it was, I got so lucky here. Oh my gosh, this, I had no, I thought we were dead in the water, but you know, that the last minute this happened. And that's more reality.
100%. Can all relate to this. How do you handle the in-person versus virtual? Because I think that's something you mentioned at the beginning of the episode, like you really value the fact of being 2 feet from one another. And I suspect now, I mean, if I look at your recent episodes, you're doing it virtually for most of it. Am I correct?
The last few have been virtual. The next 4 are in person. So what I was doing for the longest time, one day of the month, I would rent out a office at a incubator where I know the owner. In fact, when I say rent out, I just reserve. They would give it to me in exchange because you're getting VIPs walking in and out of their facility. And sometimes they would stop and take pictures with them. And, you know, so it was a cross promotion.
Man, you're really killing this. You are killing this.
So, you know, they benefited. I got the space. They got the pictures and stuff like that. And so I would just block off one day and just do every 2 hours a new person. And that was, and to do something like that with these people's calendar, you'd block them off 2-3 months in advance. You know, I would say it would be June, and I would have everyone in October booked out. So it was that far in advance. But then more recently, the last few months, I've had to travel quite a bit for work. And it's hard to cancel these people's times. Yeah, 2 weeks notice because you have to fly out for work. And it's like, I'm so sorry, but you know, this is a transaction that's time sensitive. I have to be here for these meetings. I just can't do it. So right now, because of a few deals I'm working on, I have to do them with, it's got to be more Zoom and more flexible. But then, you know, ideally it is back to in person, and then it'll be a hybrid moving forward just because things are pretty busy. But no, you build that relationship in person. Zoom's great, but sitting down, you know, laughing with the person, grabbing tea after or whatever, that's more memorable. So that's why I look at it. Yes, it's more work, but the benefits are there. So I try to do everything in person. I really do. And like I said, the next batch of interviews will be, you know, it's a conference that I'm converting into podcast. But then there's some that, you know, have to be Zoom because one, travel, or two, the person used to be in Silicon Valley and then during the shutdown moved to someplace else and they're not going to be here for a while. But for example, book's coming out or something where they, you know, they want to do the interview to promote the book and the book comes out in 4 weeks. Can we get that interview now? It's okay, I got the opportunity to interview this person or not. Do I take it? Yeah, I got to take it.
That makes a lot of sense. And I see how, yeah, you cannot just completely walk around it the hybrid way. But if you can, you will go the extra mile to actually interview people in person because that's how much value you get out of it.
So for example, this Sunday, I'll leave out the name, but basically he was one of the founders of Intel. Well, I mean, he's not like the first one or two, but you know, in that first batch. And, you know, he's got the mansion up. You know, it's going to be a 2-hour drive to get to his home, and he's only available this Sunday. And it was 2 months planning to get this. And the introduction was from James Cape, who is a past guest, who's the current president of the Intel Alumni Network. And his thing is, Sean, we got to get this guy's story recorded because, you know, older gentleman, who knows? Maybe he's around another 2-3 couple years. No one knows. But it's Sean, we got to get this story. I'll set up the interview. I've known him for 30 years, but would you be willing to drive there? Because he's not going anywhere. And, you know, it was, okay, I'll spend my Sunday hanging out in a mansion with this legend. Yeah, sure, you know. I guess, I mean, I got to get permission from the wife for, you know, our Sunday being occupied. But, yeah, you know, you got to do it. And hopefully this turns out great and he enjoys the conversation. Maybe he then introduces me to some of the people in his network or says, hey, this other person would be great for your podcast, or, you know, it just snowballs from there. But the opportunity came about from an interview with, as funny as it sounds, James Cape, who's the current president of Intel Alumni. And that interview came from, gosh, who was the Jeep Klein, who was the first VC in Thailand, who was an ex-Intel person. And that came from an interview with John McNulty, who was a top person at Intel, and that came from a warm introduction. So it's like one snowball after the other, just one warm intro, and all these guests keep lining up because the first one was happy, introduced me to someone in their network, that person was happy, introduced me to someone in their network, that person was happy, and now we're, like I said, 2-hour drive, hanging out in a mansion with a legend, and gonna hear some amazing stories.
That's freaking cool. That makes me think of the compound effects. Like, just, you know, it snowballs. And like, just keep on doing it. Be consistent. Aim for longevity. And the fruits you will harvest are just amazing. How long did it take you actually, Sean, to really see that kind of compound that you're like, okay, guys, I'm really getting in front of people that I would have. I'm starting to understand the person, so maybe not never dreamt of, but thought like, okay, it will be hard to get in front of this kind of people. As of when did the podcast bring that kind of fruits to you?
It was about episode 50. Like, because before that, you know, episode 30, all the guests after that were warm intros, but still there was effort. Like, the first 30 was me a lot of emails, a lot of please make an intro. Is there anyone in your network? Please help out. Please help out. Please help out. Then I'd say episode 30 to 50 was, all right, thank you for that warm intro. But then after episode 50, I'm not sure if I got on all these marketing companies or PR list or something like that. But it was around that when I started to get these just random companies, PR companies reaching out to me going, hey, we have a client. We think they'd be a great fit for your podcast. And because of that, past guest, some listeners, after that, you know, now I'd say I take one for every three or four intros that come in. And they're all quality intros. Like, they're all spectacular. Some people, personalities might not fit the show. Like, I really try to interview the people that on the initial screening call, I get this great feeling of, hey, we can, you know, we're going to be buddies past this episode. Like, that's what I'm looking for on that screen. And there's some people that, you know, had very successful careers, maybe, you know, top first 40 employee of Facebook or something like that, that you have that call and you go, wait a second, this person thinks they're a little bit above everyone. You know, I'm not sure if I would even talk to this person outside the pod. And, you know, you don't do the interview. And these people are so busy, they don't even notice. You know, their marketer is not going to tell them the truth. You'll just say to the marketer, yeah, it wasn't a personality, it wasn't a fit for the show, but, you know, super nice person, just personalities weren't there. The interview, I just kind of feel the conversation wouldn't be fluid, and I want to put the person in the best light, so I, you know, it's probably just not a good fit. Everyone's happy, no big deal. But yeah, no, now it's, I'd say after episode 50, it was really just these inbound requests of so-and-so is my client, he's got a book coming out, so-and-so is on a speaking tour, so-and-so is coming to Silicon Valley for this reason, would you be interested in meeting? And past guest happy. Yeah, it was episode, I'll just say 50, the compound effect of that. That's when I noticed, wow, you know, I, even though this is a lot of hours, could I ever stop it? Yeah, I've thought of pivoting. I've thought of doing a mergers and acquisition focused podcast. I've thought of doing the investment banking podcast. I've thought about shifting it over to what I do all day long. But some reason, people get all excited when they're like, I'm on the Silicon Valley. You know, that Silicon Valley, that mystery, the aura behind it resonates with them so much more than mergers and acquisitions. Oh, that's boring. So, you know, maybe I end up, I think it's awesome. Like, I've thought about doing a second podcast, but then it's bandwidth and time. But now, having some form where you're interviewing and talking to people, it's incredible. You get in front of people that you normally wouldn't. You get to, I mean, gosh, I can't even tell you, some of these conversations I have with people, I feel I should be paying them for a consultant hour. You know, because really, it's like, wait a second. Like, one of the guys, Adam Coffey, he's written a couple best-selling books, you know, Private Equity Playbook, you know, Build Your Empire. And the guy did something like 30-plus acquisitions, something like 50 or $5 billion in market value over his career as a CEO. And, you know, he's charging seven figures for these weekend master, you know, groups that he runs. And I'm getting an hour of his time to ask any question I want. And I'm looking at it going like, should I, like, how much would he charge a normal person for what I'm doing right now? This just doesn't make sense. But it's because of, you know, going back to that compound in it. So could I ever give up this podcast? I don't know. I'm able to have this plethora of mentors, advisors out there answering questions for me on topics I'm interested in. And I'm seeing, okay, how did they get there? How can I get there one day? And I really think we all need mentors in our lives. I really think if you want to keep growing and get to where you want, to find that person that's a few steps above you, find that person that's many steps above you, find that person that's, you know, at that ultimate goal, and you know, just ask all of them questions and help you progress. So that's actually another thing that I use the podcast for, is just the personal development. I mean, really, it is. It's incredible. I have a question on this topic. Huh, I really want to dive deep into quality of earnings, because as an investment banker, I really think I should know more about this. I'll get Elliot, who is an expert, and have him on the show.
Man, it's such a door opener, and I love it. I mean, can't recommend not to start another podcast, but I mean, you seem to be on something quite big here. And man, Sean, just to like add to that aura effect, I'm having the guy from the Silicon Valley podcast on my podcast. Boom. How much is that for a name drop? Crazy.
Don't forget, you're also going to get some of my past guests, because after, you know, if you want an intro to the pet guy, Aman is he's a cool guy. I'm more than happy to make an intro to him, and there's other guests that you might want to talk to. So, I mean, yeah.
Oh, boy. Now it's said. Let's definitely keep that one. Sean, three advice for podcasters. Anybody wanting to start a podcast, what we focus on is B2B podcasts. Obviously, people like that have a business that want to start a podcast or have a podcast. Marketers who are part of a bigger organization who strongly advocate for podcasts but like struggle to either find budget for it or like make it grow, being consistent about it. What are your advice for podcasters out there?
One, don't underestimate the importance of good sound quality. Some podcasts, the background noise, microphone pops, all this stuff. With AI software now, so much of it can be cleaned up pretty simply. And if not, you know, someone overseas to edit it for you. It cost shouldn't be the issue in it. And another thing is people, and this is one area I struggle in, honestly, is taking the content and repurposing it. When you do a podcast interview, you have months of material if you actually want to use it and use it wisely, from short clips to blog posts to transcriptions to creating an ebook from it to, I mean, the list goes on and on with just one interview from a person, an expert or someone that you want to build that relationship with, work with, or that. And, you know, I do this where I interview and then post it on YouTube and, you know, podcast and kind of leave it at that, or I know I have so much good content out there that I could be taking these clips and putting them on TikTok and Instagram and all these other platforms and that. So I recommend everyone out there, when you have your podcast, one, think of the sound quality. Two, think of how you can repurpose the content in as many ways. Three, make it about the guest more than yourself. Really build that relationship. Really put that person on a pedestal, really, you know, get to know them. Don't underestimate the importance of having your guests comfortable before you start recording. You know, the first 5 minutes for a lot of guests, they're nervous, they're shaking. Have that conversation beforehand, get them comfortable, then have the interview. Yeah, have some questions in advance, but don't have it too scripted. Have that natural conversation, let it flow. Let it go down the different paths. Those for me are the most interesting. And follow up with your guest. Don't just end it right then and that's it. Follow up with them. Let them know the interview is going to go live. Tell them when the interview is going to go live. Follow up with them for coffee or a call or that. Build that long-term relationship. And, you know, it'll be the greatest lead pipeline you'll ever create. And, you know, build communities around it. I've seen so many people use their podcast different ways. I was on this one podcast where the guy invited everyone after to his mastermind group. And the mastermind group he charges for, but he tells you, these are my past guests. Of those, you know, two out of three are in this mastermind group. You get access to these people, these people, these people. I know people that have taken their podcast and created newsletters with the free version and the paid version. I know podcasts that have used it to then start speaking careers, that use it as package it to then go out to corporates to do corporate training based on. There's so many different ways that I've seen podcast hosts leverage their podcast to take their career to the next level. So when you're doing your podcast, it could pivot a ton of different ways, but have some type of strategy. Like, how are you going to use this to its fullest? Not just have that conversation and be done with it. Have that conversation and utilize it in so many different ways. So it's a lot, but that's my suggestion for everyone out there of just, you're sitting on gold, really, when you have this, and take full advantage of it.
Amen. Out there, I like to wrap up this episode, Sean, with recommendations for the three podcasts that you have been or that you listen to. Obviously, the Silicon Valley podcast. We are going to put the link in the description. Strongly advise anybody listening to us right now to go and check it out. Just truly some golden nuggets in there only. But what are three other podcasts that you would recommend?
Okay, I listen to a lot of content, a lot. One of my favorites is David C. Barnett. So he does small business and deal making podcasts where he talks about more Main Street businesses, but just deal tactics, deal terms. His content, I think, is spectacular. There's one podcast they only did a short series of, but it's spectacular. It's M&A Science with Kistan Patel. I actually had him on my podcast before. That one's great. Oh, Middle Market Mergers and Acquisitions by Colin A. Advisors. They didn't do many episodes. I think there's 24, but the content there is fantastic. As you can tell, kind of a pattern of mergers and acquisition focused podcast. But I do like, you know, Macro Voices. I like the George Gammon Rebel Capitalist. Huberman Lab is great. How I Raised This is good. One I just started listening to about a week ago is Startup Therapy with Will Schroeder and, gosh, who's the other guy? I just started listening to that podcast maybe 2 weeks ago, and I've probably gone through 20 episodes already. Oh, gosh. Whenever I'm driving, working out, I mean, on occasion I'll have that YouTube video or that, but for the most part, there's so much great content out there. I mean, either I'll listen to an audiobook or I listen to podcasts, and, you know, most of it's podcasts, to be honest. And then some other ones, sorry for all these recommendations, but The Deal Room by Transworld, I like that. I also like Brian Wills, The Force Multiplier Mastermind is good. And then The Full Ratchet, that's a classic with Nick Morand. I don't know, I could sit here for days, but I got, yeah. And then everyone on the Investors Podcast Network. I mean, those are all good ones too. So I'm just scrolling down my the ones I subscribe to, and I probably there's 40 or so that I listen to. But
man, where do you find the time? You're an investment banker, Sean. How do you do that?
Well, a lot of it's in the background. While I'm doing massive amount of emails, because that seems to be all I do, it's just playing in the background at 2x speed. And then, you know, you get through a lot of it, and sometimes you have to stop and re-listen because we're like, did I listen to any of that?
Sean, that was an absolute masterpiece, and I had lots of fun. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It was absolutely great.
Guillaume, it was my pleasure. I look forward to continuing the conversation. Like I said, you know, hopefully maybe some of my past guests will be on your show, but no matter what, let's just continue the conversation.
Love that. Let's do this. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you for listening to the B2B Podcast Stories. We hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please don't forget to hit subscribe and check us out at ghamarketing.com. Have a great day.